We've got Chester, which I will get into in a second. You are, get ready, you're DIY. That comes up, those three letters come up every 16.2 seconds. That's the exact number. You have big fans at BBC Six, BBC One. You met at uni. See, I get to say uni because that's what you call it there. Your name was a joke. I am supposed to pronounce it as penis, not penis. Okay. What did everybody study at uni and did you actually graduate?
We all graduated and we all studied popular music performance.
Wow. So you actually knew you were going to be dumb enough to be doing this.
Yeah.
Sort of, literally. Tyler and I were in the same year and then Rachel's in the year below.
I'm the baby.
I mean, seriously, popular music performance.
It was basically an idea to doss around for 3 years, wasn't it? Like,
well, no, I just want to know, like, what are three classes that you take, like microphone placement? And when you scream, hold the microphone out here, don't hold it over there.
That's lesson one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had choir. We had to, that was like a compulsory module that we had to do.
Yeah, music theory. And we did like songwriting modules and stuff like that as well.
Wow. I want to come over to your country and go to university. Basically, Chester was because you went to college there.
Yeah,
that's right.
And you said, it's a small place, we'll stay there.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, it's pretty ideal. I mean, it's quite central to everywhere that we need to get to, really. So
how much time did you spend on trains going to shows everywhere else out of Chester?
Too much time.
A lot of time.
Oh, my God.
A lot of money, a lot of time.
Yeah.
I didn't learn to drive until a couple of years into doing the band, so we had to like take all of our gear on trains and get friends to give us lifts and stuff.
Thinking about it now, like how the hell did we
do that? I don't know how we managed that. Oh my God.
It's ridiculous. Yeah.
One time, Rachel was on the train and she was on her way home. I'm just going to tell you. You had your drums, your breakables and stuff, your cymbals and stuff, and you're getting off a train and it hit your knee a bit weird, right? And your knee dislocated on the train.
And I held up a train for like 2 hours because they were waiting for an ambulance to come get me with my knee out.
That's rock and roll.
You're like, where's my snare?
Yeah, it was horrible. It wasn't a very good day, that, I can't tell you.
How early on did you know that you were going to attempt to make a career at this? You know, where did it go from, we're playing covers and we're figuring this out? Did you turn to each other at any moment in time and say, oh, wait a minute, we might be able to do this?
It's tricky that. I think every time something new happens, we're like, oh, we're a real band. Like, you know, we're always kind of having that conversation with ourselves, but it's always kind of been like pure, like doing it for the fun. So when these other things happen, it's just kind of been a bonus and it's, and now we're just, I don't know.
I feel like we've like, since we started the band, I knew it was something that I wanted to pursue, but we kind of know that the state of the music industry is not really something that you can make a lot of money out of, but you know what I mean?
Really?
Yeah. I think we've always been realistic about it. Like we've always had to have like our day jobs. Yeah. We always had to have a day job.
This is such a great segue. It's right here. What does everybody do for their day job? Because you are caught.
I don't have a day job at the moment, but
What were you doing and what do you want to do?
I don't want a day job. I just want to do this, but I was working in an estate agent's, like working in property and stuff, but yeah, it's so boring. It's so boring. Like, I'd much rather just be doing this.
Next. Jess and I have the same job. So we both do the live subtitles for a popular channel in the UK.
Are you serious? That's, wait. That's really cool.
Such a cool job.
It's pretty good.
Not changing the name. How many times have you been asked or told by various people, you know, you'd go so much farther if you called yourself Dog Meat?
Yeah. Do you know what? Like, it's really funny that you should mention this now, because today someone actually tweeted and said that we had a desperately bad name. So even to this day, like 7 years on now from when we first formed, like, we're still getting people like, yeah, that's name, or you should change your band name. Like,
it's memorable, though, isn't it?
It's memorable.
It hasn't stopped us.
You know what I think? I think you should tell anybody that here's why it works, because I see it, you know, on the C list or whatever, or see it, you know, on a house, whoever it is, playlist, whichever BBC One person is competing over you at the moment, of which I know there's a couple that always want to be first. And then I say, okay, can this music really be serious? Can it be good? What it did for me is I kind of said, WTF, as the kids say. And then I listen, I'm like, wait. This is really good. This fits everything I like. So you know what? If it's a I believe in the whatever it takes rule. And if this is what gets people to you, because you don't want to be like Brickhead, formerly Penis, you know, that doesn't work.
Definitely. Yeah. Thanks for saying that.
Yeah, thank you. Like, it's something that we definitely thought about at the start for a while, but we just thought, I don't know, we don't take ourselves too seriously anyway.
Like as people.
As people, you know, I just think it fits with this kind of like cheeky kind of like sound of the music as well. And it's just a bit of anatomy, do you know what I mean? If you're scared of saying penis, then...
Grow up. Yeah. What the aim is for, we were saying this the other day, aren't we? For people to think of the word penis or penis and think of us before they think of a dick. That would be, you know, that's how high we're aiming.
Again, I have a 3-word rule, whatever it takes. So, okay, we're going to blow up stuff. I blow up genres for a living. Punk, fuzz pop, but polished. When you're actually sitting down next to somebody in the pub and they say, so what do you play? What do you tell them other than what works on a playlist or, you know, a Spotify genre or whatever? What do you tell them?
3-minute pop songs that are sad bangers.
Oh, I like that. And this fits in there because it's so much fun to fool people with happy sound and then tell them that life is just absolute awful. That love won't work and there'll be breakups and the world is going to end. And BBC Introducing is this kind of amazing thing. How does that happen for you? How did that happen?
We put it up on the BBC Introducing Uploader like years and years ago. And a guy called Adam Walton, who's the BBC Radio Wales Introducing guy, picks it up, and I think it's just his kind of style of music. And then I think you might have known someone who knew him, Jess, did you? Or something? I don't know. There's some kind of connection there, anyway. He lives in Chester and he just really supported us loads from the start and helped us get our first gigs in Wales and kind of outside of Chester as well.
Yeah, he actually played us on the radio as well before we even had our first gig.
Yeah.
Which was mad.
We were well excited. It was great.
So that system, once you're in it, it's kind of cool because then other DJs hear it and go, oh, I'll play it.
Well, BBC is the big dog, isn't it, over here? Mm-hmm. So like if you end up getting played on BBC Radio, like the nationwide stations, then you've made it, really, because you're going to have millions and millions of listeners. You can get there with BBC Uploader and stuff and Introducing, but you still need, you know, pluggers and all that sort of stuff. You still have to be like okay it with their producer. The DJ doesn't even bloody know what they're playing. They just get handed songs, you know. So it's kind of it's not what you know, it's who you know, it seems, still over here.
Who's behind you, helping you get to the next level?
That's us.
Well, we do have a manager, a guy called James Amner, but the support slots have kind of come around from a few different kind of ways, really. So it's not, to be fair, like, not throwing shade to James here, but we do a lot of that stuff ourselves, to be honest. Like, this is what we mean by being a DIY band. Like, we have a very small team of people that work with us and we kind of do all the day-to-day stuff ourselves. So we're constantly on doing what we call band min, which is just sorting out things like, you know, exactly that, and like organizing our time, and we just do it between the three of us, really. Yeah.
We don't want to be owing some guy millions of pounds.
Yeah, literally.
When we can do it. Well, we can't, but not worth it.
But like, it's important for us to have kind of control over what we do, I think, with both our finances, because we value that, and creatively as well. We wouldn't want someone telling us what to do on the basis of like, oh, we'll do this for you if you do what we say. That isn't what we've gone in it to do in the first place, you know.
I think it comes from as well, like, spending so much time as an unmanaged band. Like, we were self-managed for quite a few years. It was only 2018 that we got a manager.
Yeah.
But yeah, we still like, there's some of those things that we do that we just can't let go of, that we still have to keep control over and keep a watch over.
So now I'm really curious, because I have lots of friends here in LA and in New York, you know, in London, who are artist managers. What exactly does your manager do? I'll cut this out, but I'm now curious.
He kind of is just like there as an extra person to go to for like advice, or like, do you think we should do this? Is this a good idea? And he's also good at like, you know, maybe setting a plan about the next 6 months, 12 months. Mm-hmm. And also he's got a lot of contacts with like sync people. Advisors. Not that we've got any of those yet, but.
he helped us get our label partner. Because we're self-releasing the album, but he helped us get a distributor and a label partner to help us do that, because we would have been pretty out of our depth.
Full length in May.
Finally.
I know, so that's a long, so tell me a little bit.
Probably been sitting on this album, started it probably about 3 years ago. We definitely went back into the studio a couple of times to like record extra songs and like extra parts touring and stuff. But it all finally kind of came together during the pandemic, but most of these songs were all written pre-pandemic as well.
We've been sat on it basically.
And speaking of DIY, producer, self-produced, great engineer.
We go to the same place. It's just our friend Russ. So he engineers. And he does a bit of producing as well. He's a classically trained like jazz pianist. So his understanding of harmony and things like that are just incredible.
He's great.
But we go in, you know, with money being tight and stuff, we've gone in pretty much knowing exactly what we're doing. We've rehearsed, you know, to like perfection, and then we just go in and bash it out really quick. We self-produce mostly.
Wow. Well, I guess that college course paid off, because it sounds really good. What is the filter for one of your songs? How do you know when a song is in process, or even when it gets there? How do you say to yourself, how do you know it's the song that's right for you, that it's going to work for the band?
I think if it gets stuck in our head, then we'll be like, we should probably pursue this idea. We just kind of know. I guess between the three of us, I feel like we're all pretty creatively on a similar page, and it just tends to like come together, like some songs at least anyway,
gradually,
kind of come together naturally, because we've all got a similar kind of idea of which way we want to take it. But
an idea is not working for us, we'll just move on to the next one and come back to it.
Well, Bella and I on the music course that we were doing, we specialised in vocal, and obviously Rach did drums. So we've been singing together
for like 12 years.
12 years.
Yeah.
And I think we're just used to it. We're used to where our voices go.
Yeah. Like, it comes so naturally to us now. Like don't even think about me.
But
now,
I guess there's a lot of practice. We've done it for a long time.
Yeah. So
you're touring the UK around the record. Are you going to go further than that? Or are you just kind of saying, we're just going to let the record do what it does and then see where it goes from there?
Yeah, I think in this current climate, we'd kind of have to do that, really.
It'd be great to do further afield. Like we say, we'd love to come to America. We'd love to do more European shows, but Brexit hasn't helped with the European shows either. So we'll have to just wait and see, I guess.
Yeah. It's absolutely Brexit. We're really lucky, and we played in like mainland Europe quite a few times. And you know, it's as simple as just going through the tunnel or getting a ferry, and then that's it. But now
they've made it 10 times more difficult.
So are we talking visas here?
Pretty much.
And also about like taking merch in and stuff like that. You have to declare everything, and like
you get things called carnets to go into each country. So it's cheaper to get the merch made in the country and then collect it when you get there. And if you go into a few different countries within mainland Europe, you'll need to like announce it and declare it and pay tax in that country.
Oh my gosh.
It's got so ridiculously complicated. Just for a band of our size, it's just
it's ludicrous.
I have invented a thing called the musical sandwich. And what it is two of your songs on the outside, and then you get to play anything you want in between.